And we give our graduates a little book so they can keep writing, and I didn't get it to you, but and then there's a card that many of you had an opportunity to sign, and if you did not, you can do so afterwards. I'm sure you will be here, all right? And I did not hear from Ruth, but she can't be here today. I know she is auditioning, and so we'll hear more about her next week. Our speaker today is Paul Sukup, as you know. He returns to Winona after a 5.5-year hiatus. He has lived in Taiwan, Vietnam, and currently in Chiang Mai, Thailand. He has navigated other nations' bureaucracies and banking, COVID, taught English at a cram school, and sought out community in choirs, book clubs, and board game play testing and meetups. He has recently found, I have no idea what this is, the meditative practice of building GUNDAM robot models. And here's Paul.
Good morning, everybody. I'm putting myself on a 15-minute timer so I don't go too crazy here. And I'm also trying to keep each section to about 5 minutes each here. First of all, I'd like to thank Minnesota. I got here on a Friday and was greeted by upper 70s and high humidity, only followed by a tornado warning, and then this morning, flurries. And I'm like, where else can I go in the world and get all four seasons in 3 days? Thank you. It was a warm reception-ish. Jade and I, we left Minnesota here on Thanksgiving Day 2020, is when we flew off to Taiwan, and not 100% sure what we were expecting when we got there, all told, slightly, but not really. And it was a little bit of there was definitely a period of time of getting adjustment, knowing what's going on. I did not find out the power of Google Lens and its translates ability until about 9 months being in Taiwan. So really working hard to try to understand and read Mandarin or China, or simple or traditional Chinese over there was difficult, only to be able to, like, I knew about 3 or 4 different types of foods whenever we'd go someplace and be like, okay, I'm gonna have Lorofan, we're good. I can see that, I know what's going on there. And one of the first things we had to do in that situation was the only way that I was able to go to Taiwan was with us being married. Otherwise, I would not have been welcome into the country because they had closed everything down and there were no people getting in that were not nationals or people from there, or they had some reason to be there at all. So we had been married. We got married in September before that, before we left, and it had not been recognized yet. So technically, I was allowed to go in there. However, we still had to get my visa situation set up, and we had a short period of time. So I had to seek out employment in order to have that immigration or that visa status taken care of until we could get all the paperwork taken care of. So I sought out a teaching job, which I was able to find relatively quickly. And I will state from all educators here in this room, teaching is definitely a muscle. Because those first 3-4 weeks of doing this, I would get done with school and I would come home and just crash. That was my life. I would wake up, go to school, teach, come home, sleep. That was until I learned how to conserve my energy throughout the day and take naps whenever I could possibly do such. One thing that I did get to find relatively quickly was that having arm hair is a novelty that they are not experienced with, and a lot of children like to come up and pet you. And we had to have a conversation that I think finally I got to the point where I was like, okay, today's lesson is about the term consent. Let's talk about this. Which they cracked and understood pretty quickly, and then it would be the Angel would go, one of the girls there would go and help get all the books and everything collected and all that, and then she'd come up and stand up to me and I'm like, yes, you can pet me. It's fine. One of the other ones that I'd like to just, this is just a fun little aside, is if you guys are familiar with the movie Kindergarten Cop, and there was a joke in there where it's not a tumor, is the joke on it. When I was doing a phonetics lesson with the kids, and the word was tube, or tuba first, and they would all say tuba, and then there was the tube, like a tube of toothpaste, and they would also say tuba. And I was like, no, this is a tuba, this is tube. And they're like, tuba, tuba. And I'm like, it's not a tuba. So, sorry. That was my fun. I enjoyed it. They didn't understand, obviously, on it. Other opportunities that we got to experience when we were in Taiwan was volunteering for an organization called Mary's Doggies. What this was is there is a particular type of dog called the Formosan Mountain Dog there. And what this organization would do is, a lot of them, people have them as pets, but they're also wild dogs there as well. And a lot of people are scared of them because they can bite, they are feral for the most part. They are an extremely intelligent dog. If you do have them as a pet, you need to keep them very occupied, otherwise they will destroy your house. They are that kind of a dog. They need to be worked. However, this organization would come and find them if people would report injured or any type of this and help rehabilitate them. And one of the things that they would do for volunteers is they would bring about 20 of the dogs to one of the dog parks, let them run around. And what we would also do in that situation was you would pick a dog, you'd also teach them leash training and how to sit and all this other things. But then you'd also just take a dog, bring them up to you, put them in your lap and just give them massages, just give them touch and all that. And it was an amazing experience to have these dogs where, you know, you might bring them up to you and they're stiff-legged like this, and then they just slowly start to relax and then just kind of fall into like a puddle into you. And then, you know, you'd give your time with them, let them go about and do their thing, and then you'd take another dog, do the same sort of thing. And then, like, throughout the 2-3 hours that you were there, like some of those dogs earlier that you kind of gave the massage and connected with, they would come over to you and just lay down next to you then. It's just that acceptance of it. And for these being feral dogs, for the most part from the start, it was amazing that all of those dogs at the dog park were the most well-behaved of all of the dogs that were there. I don't know if they just did a good job of keeping themselves in check or what it was, but everyone else's dogs, they were miserable. Another experience that we got to have there is finding out it was two gentlemen to begin with, a Taiwanese man and a French fellow that I got into a board gaming playtesting group with. They were both designers. Up to this point now, they've had 10, 15 games each designed, and they would have their prototypes to this thing and play the game, and basically their ask is to break this. Find out what you can do to make this not a game. And it was an incredible experience to go from an idea of playing a game to how can I ruin this game. And and after that too, there's a gentleman named Smooks who runs a Taiwan board game design called TBD, and he would also have these weekly meetups of people that were designing games to just get into groups of them. And he loved that I would show up, or Jade show up, because he's like, oh good, they have to do their English lesson today too. Just to get them out of their comfortability. And it was, like I said, just a fun experience to be on the other side of game playing. And sadly, there were a couple of times when I would usually be very, there's a, one of the other big things of Southeastern culture, or Southeastern Asian culture, is the idea of saving face. You know, you don't want to make fun of them, you don't want to make them feel lesser in any way. So I was being very cognizant of it. Smooks on the other end, oh no, he just terrified you. If this was not a good game or not a good design, he's like, no, we're not doing this. But it, just incredible to see how to handle that and put that all together. And one of the last portions I'll talk about with Taiwan, even though it could go on forever, was we got to experience fostering again. As we got to have our experience here in Minnesota and with certain feelings about that whole situation. But we had had a friend who had been fostering this one child, and we asked, like, what was going on with it? It was a Christian organization that their program was, they had the children there at the center all throughout the week, and then after what they were, if they would find couples that were interested in fostering, that you would have the children over the weekend, give them experiences outside of the center, take them out, take them around, let them just play in a different sort of way. And that's where we got to put together with a little boy named QQ. That was his nickname for him. And it was a absolutely wonderful experience. They took care, I mean, they provided all the food because they also wanted to keep him on a particular diet. They're like, don't spoil him, please. Keep him. But they would provide us all with the food of it. We just provided the house, the area, and the love to him. I would take him out and about. We had a lovely experience that we were taking care of a friend's cat during that period of time too, so he got to have time with a direct contact with a cat that was also used to a two-year-old, which was really nice in that case too, so he was perfectly fine with it. But there's one thing, a little bit more about the organization itself. This was formed in the 1980s, originally for children that were born of mothers that were HIV positive. In Taiwan, they were extremely on the cusp of that, of HIV, to the point where as soon as that started to happen, any drugs that people needed to take for HIV were instantly free to everybody and taken care of. And that was just a beautiful thing to hear. And so these organizations did spawn up about children that were born of an HIV positive mother during that period of time was about 50% likely to also contract HIV. So what these centers would do is make sure that these children were taken care of, that the medicine was administered to them throughout it and watched considerably throughout this period of time. And over the years, then it got down to like it's a 1 or 2% chance at this point in time for children born. That's so. And then obviously, as HIV has become less prevalent in, especially in Taiwan and stuff, that was less the form, and now it is more just a fostering sort of situation. And we were with him for about 9 months. There was a period of about 2.5 months where there was a COVID outbreak, and we had to be separated from him during that period of time. I will say one of his biggest, I think his biggest adjustment periods was when he came to our place early on, that our house was so quiet because when they slept in this, they were in a room with about 11 or 12 other children, probably all waking up through periods of throughout the night. And he's at our place and it's dead silent. I think that was probably, I will say at the first couple of weeks, probably really jarring for him. And then after that was like, oh my God, I actually get rest. This is amazing. somebody asked, like, you know, okay, and then when it was time for him to, we're no longer the ability to foster him at that point in time, about 9 months in, somebody asked me, he's like, what do you feel about that? Like, you know, he's not going to remember you at all or anything. And I was like, you know, and maybe he was, who knows? But for me, one of the amount of fostering that we've done of cats or kittens as well was a nice, I mean, it's not one for one by any means. This is a human child versus a cat. But in roughly a relatively the same sort of feeling, too, about that connection with and knowing that you're there to instill good social abilities, just life experiences that he would normally not have the chance to have. And with me especially, I would take him out. We had Kirby the cat with him at that one point in time. I would always take him out to like the pet stores to see the cats and dogs in windows. People were out running around with or taking their dogs for a walk. I would always bring them up to the dog. And you know, early on, he was like, I don't know what this is, or I'm scared of it, to the point where he would just get super excited anytime he saw a dog or cat. Just gets go, ooh, 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 all that kind of stuff. And that's to me the legacy that we gave him. Is that hopefully as his life continues, he'll always have that connection to animals. And that's all I can hope for. And that's okay by me. So we ended up, we were in Taiwan for about 3 years. We did in the third year there, we started to actually travel around once everything started to open up. Actually, I'll say one other thing that was amazing about Taiwan, going there and everybody masked. It was unquestioned. Everybody had a mask in their mouth, on their face. They had gone through SARS several years previously where they lost a few people, so they took it deadly seriously. Same thing, too, with being in the country itself and not allowing people in. We had to do a two-week quarantine in a hotel when we first got there. But it was just nice to see that sort of thing, the feeling that, well, and also there's a lot of direct contact with their elders, with their grandparents, their family members. They are all very connected, so they want to protect them. And there's also just a feeling of, you know, the needs of the many definitely outweigh the needs of the one. So that was a lovely experience to have, and saw that throughout most of Southeast Asia, to be quite honest with you. We ended up leaving Taiwan. We got to go travel around a little bit, and one of the places we experienced was Chiang Mai, Thailand, and instantly felt at home there. And it was during one of the things, and we actually got there. So Chiang Mai is in the northern part of Thailand. It's the second biggest city. It's closer to the Myanmar border and Laos, in the more the northern region there. It is an incredible place to live, except for 2 months out of the year. It's just ending up right now. There's smoky season about midway through February through the middle of April. There is forest fires that happen, and then around the area, and then also they burn the crops in these areas to prepare for the planting season. And that area, for whatever reason, the smoke all condenses in there, and it becomes one of the most polluted places on the planet for about a month and a half to 2 months. It's not good. But the rest of the time is fantastic. So you prepare yourself. That first time we went and visited there was purposely during that period of time. Because what we started to look for was a potential retirement, or they focus really on elder care there and retirement areas. And my mother had passed away about 3 years ago. And so my dad was by himself, and this was a potential place that he might be able to go. There was no ability to have him come to Thailand or Taiwan. There was no, there's no visa for that sort of a thing for a family member of a family member in that situation. But this was a place that was a possibility. And we ended up falling in love with this place too. There's a gentleman there called Steve Yarnold who does it's a living Google document that has everything that is going on in Chiang Mai for the next month that he continues to update throughout all of it, as well as weekly meetups. So it was instant being able to know what's going on in this city, which was a lovely experience. He also, other things that we've got to enjoy, even this, the first time we were there, there was a sketch group that we got to experience a meetup with and meet a bunch of different people from all walks of life. There's a gentleman named John Lindman who, if any of you are familiar with the Om Gnome, it's this little garden gnome that sits in the Om position, he is the creator of it. Which is now has 8 million Chinese knockoffs, so he doesn't make as much money on it as he used to. But he has a writing group that is there, and he's a gentleman that lived through San Francisco during the AIDS outbreak and HIV/AIDS outbreak. He himself was HIV positive, and through whatever means of what's happened, he no longer has HIV in him. So it's another kind of a wonderful experience and story to be heard about it. And instantly, the one thing that was difficult with Taiwan is it is very hustle and bustle. Everybody is working very hard and getting things and being there. So Jade was able to find a woman's group that she was able to create a bunch of connections and friends with. Me, on the other hand, I would go to these board game meetups and all this kind of stuff. And I met friends through that, but never outside of the activity. Like trying to get people together, just they didn't have time. This is the time they had, and they would go to these activities, but just there was no, like trying to talk to a couple, hey, you want to get a cup of coffee sometime? They're like, hey, it's great, maybe in like 3 weeks, but otherwise I'm too busy. And it's just, and that's how it was. Whereas in Chiang Mai, it is a much more slower pace, and I was instantly with a couple of other groups. There were a couple of board game meetups versus, and then also a disc golfing group too that I experienced, that I ended up making friends almost immediately. And it's, there's also less transient there. Whereas in Taiwan, you would meet some people and like really connect and like, oh yeah, but we're leaving in like 2 months. I'm like, okay, well, cool. It was nice to meet you. But, and we're still friends with certain people that we've kept up with that have moved back to the States since then. But there's more people that have been there a much longer period of time. And everybody seems to remember you. And then when we came back for a second visit, like everybody welcomed us back. It's like, Paul, Jade, yay, good to see you again. Wow, how's it going? So that was the feeling that we knew that this was a good place to be. We ended up, and one quick little aside too is I got to meet a gentleman. There's a German buffet restaurant in Chiang Mai with Udo Dietrich is the gentleman that owns the place. And it's an incredible experience. And the first time we met him, he was a very large man with a big burly mustache, and I could just picture him in lederhosen, just instantly, like just this perfect picture of a Bavarian man. And as we came back like 9 months after that, he had no mustache, slimmed down. I'm like, is his brother visiting or whatever? And I went up to talk to him like, Udo? He's like, yes, hey, Paul, how are you? And I'm like, great, like, you look fantastic. What happened? He's like, the doctor told me I have to stop eating meat. So I slimmed way down, I stopped doing that, I eat the vegetarian meat now, and I swim every morning, and I've lost, and I also shaved my mustache, so I lost a couple pounds right there, or a couple kilos right there. And I'm like, yeah, well, you look fantastic, that's great. And he's like, it is a funny story. He's like, all of my skinny friends say I look fantastic. All my fat friends say I look sick. But also in there, too, is we got to start volunteering and working for a cat rehabilitation company, or place called Adopt Meow. It is just a sole English lady, older English lady that takes cats in, mostly ones that are pregnant, to take care of the kittens. And ultimately, we ended up adopting a beautiful, mostly Siamese cat named William that he's with us at this point in time still. And then another one that just recently Jade started, I helped out too with it, but mostly Jade's been a part of it, is a group called Transaction Refuge. It is through an Episcopalian church of all places, but what they have put together was as much information as possible and started to communicate with family of trans children or trans people themselves, and whether or not Thailand is an okay place, especially Chiang Mai, is a place for them to come to, because it is a very LGBTQ-friendly place. Thailand is. A lot of the medicine and testosterone, estrogen, whatever they need is readily available there, and for the most part, over-the-counter as well. And this is another lovely thing to have that is not gate-kept. And so they've been working on with that and helping a couple of families already come over at this point in time, and then help them get settled and figure everything out as well, too, so they're not, you know, diving into a completely foreign place. And it's not going to be, this is not a place that's going to be for everybody. You know, your mileage may vary for wherever you go to, which is something that I've learned in traveling, too. There is no perfect place in the world. Everything's going to have its positive. Everything's going to have its negatives. And that's one of the big things to know and realize. And with this experience in Thailand as well, while we've been there, I've gotten to have my father come over twice and stay for 2 weeks and then a little over 3 weeks the second time. He likes it there a lot. I don't think he's going to come, but that's okay. Well, I just wanted to plant the seed as a possibility for him. He's down in Arizona and doing well. And the one thing I'd like to talk about with the Thai people is they are extremely friendly, extremely helpful, and kind, and they're very heavy on customer service as well, as it being a lot of service-oriented there. However, there's one thing that I've gotten to learn as now actually being there long enough to actually make Thai friends, that do not mistake any of that for subservitude. Because you will be sorely mistaken if that has happened. One quick story was, this is fourth hand, by the way, in this, where a foreigner people live next door to a Thai couple, And the foreigners kept doing something, like garbage kept going over and over into their other house, and they just got into the other lawn and area, and they're like, can you please stop this? Please don't do this. After the fourth time of them asking them to stop and fix this, they came over with sticks and beat them up. And the police came, as one would do, and they explained the situation, like what the foreigners said, and then what the Thai people said, and the cops said, oh no, you're justified, we'd probably beat you too. So it's just, they have a boundary, do not cross that. It's simply the put on it. Otherwise they're absolutely wonderful and lovely. Quick current here, I started to look for a job, mostly to kind of get myself back into my brain working a little differently than just the volunteering, which is fantastic, but I wanted a little bit more. I had applied for an online job with H&R Block because I had done this way in the past, long ago, still pretty skilled in that situation, manipulating our own situations too. And I was offered a position, but through the discussion, they asked if I would be willing to come to Arizona, once finding out my father lived there, to come and work in person during the tax season, so which I readily accepted, but they gave me the caveat that if I worked a certain amount of time, that they were also going to pay for my plane ticket to go here and back. And I was like, you know what, this works out good. Everything worked out just fine, and my father was happy to have me here. So over this last 4 months, working some grueling hours at H&R Block, especially at the end here, I got to spend the last 4 months with my father, getting to experience watched a lot of television, movies together, getting to have conversations with him, which I would have never had the chance to probably otherwise, like much more deep conversations than before. And it's been, I have zero regrets of this situation. It has been an absolute lovely experience. And with the people that I've met, even helping out people at H&R Block too, whatever you feel about them is fine, but having that, there are certain very human situations where it's a very intimate experience. You know, talk about people at bartenders. I'll say even in my life as a bank teller, you get to experience a lot of people, but there's nothing more than all of your finances and everything that's happening to a person when you're doing somebody's taxes. And having experience of curiosity with talking to them and finding out more about them. I've had a couple of extremely rewarding moments of connection. One gentleman had lost his daughter to a driving accident during a very tight corner that there is no guardrail there. And just in the conversation with him, and he had, throughout the experience of it, I just dropped the idea of, you know, is it possible for you to get the permit and build that guardrail yourself? And you just had this moment of like, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And it was this wonderful, just human, there's more to the story than that, but just this one more very human connection moment that I had with this gentleman, and then became friends with him on Facebook. And just before the end of the season, he came back in and he said, I've got the permit, we're going to do this summer and build this with the family and his grandchildren and everything else too, which was just wonderful. And then I became friends with him on Facebook, and hurry it together and be happy about that and not think about the rest of it. So, and just the last couple things I'm going to wrap up here with coming back. And when it really, it's a privilege in the way that I've been getting, we've been able to get to live our lives here. I know this is a very, very lucky situation, and to get to experience this. And one of the other privileges is to be able to turn down the news and the experience of what's going on in the world at all times. But I will say I will never turn it down when it's affecting my friends and my loved ones. And I've kept up with that. And I will say, through what's gone on here in Minnesota over the last few months, I cannot be more proud to be Minnesotan. And I wanted to, there was one of the shows that I watched with my dad, I wanted him to experience it, and I wanted to watch it again, as a show called Ted Lasso. And there's a beautiful moment in it talking about, you know, curiosity and not judgment. And And that's been a huge part about, you know, listening to that second time through, is like, living abroad, there's so easy to complain about everything that's going on, or I don't have this, or I can't get that, or why is it like that here? Why is it every time I walk into a bank in Taiwan, it is going to take me over an hour just to withdraw money? Because it's just the way it is. But you can ask why, and you find out there's a lot of regulations that come into this, and everything is. Or when they set up my account, they set it up as Paul Sokup, as opposed to Sokup Paul, like they should have done originally. You know, there's all these things that happen. But it's being in that level of curiosity and finding out, it, you open myself to so much more experiences that I had, whereas I look at what happened with Alex Peretti and Renee Good, and it was an instant moment of judgment from our administration and not curiosity. Like, why were they there? What happened? What was going on? As opposed to, oh, no, they're just domestic terrorists. And that's just, it's a very sad situation on that. And I think just kind of wrapping all of this up here is that, you know, if there's a small smidge that, and I'll just say too, with the judgment and stuff like that, seeing all these expat pages outside of expats in Taiwan or Thailand or all this, it is usually just people complaining about everything or snarky men making stupid comments. I will say, if you guys travel abroad, please have the women in your life seek out the women of wherever you're going to, because they are incredible resources and they don't suck. Unlike anything involving men in these situations are usually just terrible. I'm going to be quite honest with you on that. And I just, that's the wrap up is that, you know, what can we do to make the world a little bit better place? Just basic human decency and a little bit of curiosity, and it'll make things a little bit better. So thank you all.
We see what time it is here. We do have time for a few questions here. So if you'd come over, and I would ask someone, maybe Steve, if you could take the microphone around. Oh, Lynn will. Okay, great. So if there are any questions, comments.
Please.
There you go.
Well done, Paul.
Thanks.
Where did you get the courage to go on this journey that you've done the last? Where did the courage come from, the origin of that?
Mostly Jade, I'm going to be honest with you. She had a plan. She had a thought process of what was going on. And I will say there is this, still the courage of being accepting of it and keeping myself open to the situation. And, I mean, I'll be honest with you, COVID made it a lot easier to leave, sadly enough. But that was a big portion of it. And just starting to see kind of the fractures of what was happening in the United States. And having been able the chance to travel abroad multiple areas before, it started to see, one, it's the great thing about traveling is it makes the world a smaller place and you can be more connected to the world. But secondly is that you start seeing, hey, this is really nice here and that's really nice there. Like, how incredible really good mass transit systems are in Taiwan and if you're in Bangkok and Thailand and stuff like that. It's incredible that you're able to get anywhere. It takes a little time, but it's clean, it's fantastic. And like, it's just sad that we don't have this here, that we'd rather put our money towards other things. But so being in countries where it's like, hey, not half of our budget is spent on destruction of other places. It's kind of cool to see that. Any other questions?
When you went to the second city, what was it that drew you to that specific place? Did you have friends there, or how did you get from Taiwan to Chiang Mai?
The question is what brought you specifically to
What brought us to Chiang Mai to begin with? One, it was a very big digital nomad area, so we knew that there was a large expat community there to begin with. Second part was actually looking into the different places of retirement there as a possible place for my dad as well. And I will also say, coming there too, the area itself has a huge mountain to the one side, Doi Su Thep, and it, even though it's a much larger scale than what it is here, there is part of it that looks kind of like Winona. I'm going to be quite honest with you that. And that's the other thing too, is like going, Winona is still an incredible place. Don't ever, this is an embarrassment of riches of a place to go, and how much I talk to people about this area. And the other thing I will also say to that in it is, it is a multiple college town. And I will say that even though it is a large city, it's the second largest city, it's multi-millions of people there, it does kind of have that Winona feel to it. And that's a big, and that's something that we missed while living in Taiwan versus, and there might be areas like some of the smaller cities of Taiwan to live, but they're also much less English speaking there, and it's, you're going to be far more isolated, more so than what it is. But it's definitely a Winona vibe.
Thank you. I think given the time,
One more quick, and then
okay.
We'll get it.
Very quick.
Yep, sorry. Keep it a yes or no question.
Yeah, yes or no.
Well, sorry. Yeah. I was wondering how Taiwanese culture is dealing with the anxiety of potential looming threat of China changing their lifestyle, and if it's top of mind, or if it's in the background, or how they deal with it culturally.
That's a long question, but I'll try to answer it as quickly as possible. One of the greatest, to be fair, they have been living with this situation for 30 so plus years of China always going to invade. And I'll tell you, unless it happens, they kind of just live their lives and don't make a threat about or make a worry about it. One gentleman at a party, I was talking to him about that, and his comment was, you know what? Barking dogs never bite. He's like, once China goes silent about the situation, that is when we need to be worried. Until then, we're going to live our lives. When Nancy Pelosi came to visit there a few years back, and then China decided to do some missile testing off to the southern coast of Taiwan, Taiwanese went down to Kenting in that area to watch it. That's how they feel about the situation. When you've lived with it the entire time, they kind of, John Oliver did an amazing on Last Week Tonight about a year and a half ago. He did a piece on Taiwan in that same thing, and it's exactly that. Is they just live their lives and they don't have to worry about the threat. There's a portion of the people in Taiwan that want to reconnect with the mainland, and most of them there do not. Though they are their own sovereign nation, of way they feel about it, way the rest of the other world feels. By the way, also, Taiwan absolutely loves Tom Cruise and Top Gun because of the Taiwanese flag on the back of his flak jacket, or of his jack, a bomber jacket, and because of that reason. So, all right.
Thank you,
everybody.
Thank you. And that's for you. Yeah. Thank you. Our musical meditation today is with the choir. They will be singing Turn, Turn, Turn. And immediately after that, we'll have a moment of silence and then close the service.
To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time for every purpose under heaven. To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time. A time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to weep. To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time for every purpose. Under heaven, a time to build up. A time of